This sugya in the Shulchan Aruch is all over the place. It's really in three or four different sugyas. That is a little bit of the problem when you learn Mishnah Berurah. Sometimes you only see part of the sugya, and the advantage when you get to the end of the, you know, in modern post can look at the whole picture, and they can kind of, you know, summarize. So that's what the Pini Halacha does in this on this issue, we're going to see that even though it starts out really, really, I guess, strict, the Pini Halacha in particular ends up bringing 20 leniencies. I bring down 20 different leniencies for Amira L'Nachri when you can ask a Gentile. So you just have to know what the Halacha is, and you can generally get to a happy solution. But like many Halachas, you're just going to know what the options are. Okay? So, in fact, this actually just came up, Mamish, this Shabbos. It was, I had four guys over, and then I went down to the Kotel because I had two spots left. And I had these two Poles, two Lithuanian dudes that I picked up from the Kotel, and they were at my house for Shabbos. And I walk in, and my wife says, oops, I turned on the hot water thing, and it was like bubbling, and it was like about to explode. So we had to figure out, can I ask these Gentiles to turn off the hot water thing or not, or do I have to hint to it, or how do I hint to it?
Who should
have been asked? They were very clearly Gentiles. But they were awesome. They loved my Shabbos. And one of them was talking afterwards about converting, actually.
Wow.
Which is pretty insane. But we were trying to convince him that it's don't be too quick to make that jump. But he loved it. They were good Christians, but they loved the Shabbos.
Why even
otherwise? In general, we're not into proselytizing in Judaism, and if at the end of the day he was a sincere Jew, he really sincerely wanted to convert to Judaism, of course we would give him the information that he needed. But I was sometimes a person can get one impression of what Judaism is from a nice Shabbos meal, and then like you have to explain that it's a little bit more complex than just sit around and have some nice food and talk about God. It's like, it's more complicated than that. So just, you know, they should understand what they would want to get themselves into. Anyways, okay. So Amir Lakum, do Gentiles have to keep Shabbos? Let's start there.
No.
They're
not supposed to.
They're not even allowed to keep Shabbos. Give up. So what, this is just by really quick introduction, what would be the problem with asking Jimmy the non-Jew to turn on a light for you? What the problem is? Where'd that come from? Anybody have an idea? Thoughts? What could be a problem? Sorry? Shliach. Oh, excellent. So, Ezra says, there's really three perspectives. Ezra is Mischaven, I believe, Rash. No, Rashi Rambam, and I forgot. But there's one opinion that when you're asking this Gentile to do this malacha for you, he's like your shliach. He's like your messenger. So it's like he's doing it for you, and that could be a problem. Some of the Rabbi Akiva Eger says, look, if no shliach, it's by a non-Jew, so therefore it looks like he's a shliach. I'm not going to get into too much of that. Could be one possible problem of asking a Gentile to do something for you. What else? Just on your own svara. Might we think would be the problem with asking a Gentile to do something for you? What does it do to Shabbos if we ask Gentiles to do?
It's not Shabbos, Dick.
Good, exactly. It seems like it's not in the spirit of Shabbos. It kind of makes a joke out of Shabbos. If every time I need a light on, I'm going to go to a Gentile, or every time I need, I'm going to say, oh, I get a non-Jew to do it for me. It kind of takes away from the sanctity of Shabbos. And that's the Rambam. Jared, you're mischaven to the das of the Rambam. The Rambam writes that it will make it like it's lenient. It will make it like it's nothing for you to turn on the lights. Once you get used to something, psychologically, even if you're not doing it, if the other people are doing it, it makes it like not such a big deal. So the rabbis wanted us to feel, they don't want to make Shabbos light in our eyes, and therefore they made this rabbinical isser called Amir Lakum.
So why are they, like, if there are certain, like, in Israel specifically, there are Jewish communities that are almost 100%, like, that communities that have, like, a Shabbos goy on retainer, driver knows how you...
Good, exactly. So we're going to have to balance these two ideas. On the one hand, we have the law, but on the other hand, the rabbis made many, many exceptions to those law, to that law, and it's kind of like a balance. On the one hand, we want to make... we do believe in the idea of not just letting people do it for us, but on the other hand, the rabbis were lenient in many situations, and we'll have to go through this specific situation, what the reason for that Shabbos guy, for example, is. Okay, but the bigger idea, the Rama, so it shouldn't be light in your eyes.
It's actually very funny. One quick note, part of a national board, I guess, of Shabbos in Israel, until a few weeks ago. And basically, this board was a collection of people who start organizations across the country. It would mean, many different organizations to try and figure out what exactly Shabbos in Israel is. And one of the statistics that they raised was that the highest day of the week with the highest number of Arabs who are working, with the longest hours, is Saturday. And that was a serious question that was raised at the panel, was like whether or not this is something that we really want to have in our Jewish state. And this is actually raised by the way by the Hillel guy, a totally secular Jew. He's like, listen, I believe that Shabbos is a day of rest for all people, and God says so in the Bible. And here it's the largest day of employment of non-Jews. There's hotels and restaurants and all these places out in the country that doesn't employ Jews.
It's not fair to not let them work.
What?
It's not fair to not let them
work. It's balanced. It's balanced. You're absolutely right. Sorry.
Yeah, but you can't tell them not to work. Like, what else?
Well, maybe what if you pass the law that said that no one is allowed to work at all on Saturday?
Then the entire tourism industry is going to collapse. People just on Saturday for weekends.
So anyway, that's fascinating.
I'm not saying it's a practical thing. I'm just disappointed to see that in a state which values rest on Shabbat so much, non-Jews were being employed well beyond the numbers of the rest of the week on Dafka Shabbat.
Right. All right. Cool. Awesome. Thank you very much. Okay. Cool. So we've gotten Shliach as a possibility. We've gotten the spirit of Shabbat. This is something very Rambam-y. He does this also with Muksa. He kind of, besides the Gemaras, which explain the reasoning for Mutza, he makes up his own reason, and doesn't make it up, but it's about the spirit of Shabbos. Now, he says also Mutza is to make Shabbos feel different, and also here the Rambam says it's to kind of not make it light in your eyes. I was going to give the example, it's like, I don't know, let's say a person never misses a minyan. I'm personally someone that tries my best to not miss a minyan. And then you end up, for good reason, missing minyan. You go on a vacation and you're doing shliulas, and then you're not davening with a minyan for like a week. Then when you go back, it's not as big of a deal anymore to miss minyan. Right? That's what happens, because it's like, I missed it over there. And so in your head, it's like not such a big deal anymore. And you end up being lenient maybe in situations that you wouldn't have otherwise. Or another good example I'd say is like Yom Tov Sheni Shalgalius. Right, where one of the reasons given, where many say that in Israel we should keep a second day of Yom Tov, is because then when you go back to America, so then you're gonna have to be keeping Yom Tov Sheni Shalgalius. But how's that Yom Tov? You okay? How's that Yom Tov Sheni Shalgalius gonna feel?
Even more special.
Maybe, but for some people, they say like it's kind of like fake. Because in Israel, I didn't keep it, and now in America, I'm going to keep it.
Yeah, because you're in Galus, the diaspora. So you deserve it.
Okay, so that's what we're looking at. Anyway, so
just have me talk to those people.
So anyway, I think there's a lot of validity to this Rambam-y approach. Okay? Yeah.
I have one. I'm even saying four.
Okay. Number three, and if you guys could, you guys, this is on the test test, so write the test. Reason number three for Amir Lakum is simply based on a Mechilta. The Mechilta says, yeah.
What's the Gemara's favorite fish?
Mechilta fish. Die dead.
Okay, Viking. So the Mechilta is a midrash. It's a midrash, and the Mechilta reads a pasuk in Shmos. The pasuk says, "Lota melacha should not be done by them." The Mechilta then says, "It does not say you should not do it, but it should not be done." Not that you shouldn't do it, but it should not be done. Mashma. That it should not be done. That no one's allowed to do it. Not even a non-Jew. And therefore, the Mechilta learns out that you can't ask a Gentile to do malacha for you. Now, this Mechilta is a huge machlokes, whether it's a deraita or derabana. Whether the Mechilta is quoting a pasuk. So, lefi a pashtus, according to this simple reading, would this be a biblical law or a rabbinical law if it's quoting a pasuk, guys?
Biblical.
On the other hand, we all have heard of the concept of an asmachta, right? Mm-hmm. What's an asmachta? It's a rabbinical law, but they use the pasuk to strengthen it and support it. So maybe some will understand this to be a rabbinical law, and the Masulta is just using it as a drasha. Okay? So, huge machlokes. Yep, you can do it now. I don't mind if you want to write the answers in as I, as we go through it. So halacha lamaitz, it's a machloket, but most poskim rule that it is a rabbinical law. Okay? Practically speaking, most, because there are gemaras which indicate like this, most rabbis feel like this is a rabbinical law made up by the rabbis, and therefore there are many times when we will be able to be lenient when it comes to Amir al-Akum, as opposed to biblical laws. Got that, guys?
Got it.
Okay, so you got the Shlichus, Mechilta, Rambam. There's one more opinion that I forgot to mention, that's Rashi. Okay? Rashi says there's a drasha called Dabir Dabar, which means that the way you speak on Shabbos is meant to be different than the way you speak during the week. For example, you're not really supposed to talk about politics on Shabbos. Except if you enjoy talking about politics, right? For a month. If it's an oneg for you.
Wait, why politics?
So that there are many things in the category of things that you're supposed to speak about or not speak about on Shabbos, and secular topics or politics are within the category of non-holy.
What if it's not politics?
But if you enjoy it, the Rama writes you're allowed to speak about
politics.
Okay, so maybe that could be within the category of perhaps something with more value, especially if you enjoy it. But that's a good example of Dabar Dabar. Another good example of Dabar Dabar is you're not allowed to plan doing malacha on Shabbos. You're not allowed to say, oh, let's go to the movies on Saturday night. Okay? God willing, we'll do another shiur about that, about when planning for after Shabbos. But in this category of Dabar Dabar, Rashi explains asking a Gentile to do malacha for you would also be prop. Okay? So you got Rambam, Rashi, Mechilta, and I forgot. But those are the basic opinions, and there are nafkaminas which come out depending on which is the reasoning. We are generally trying to be machmir about all the reasons. That's all by way of introduction. Now let's talk about halacha l'maisa, situations of amir l'akum. Okay. So we're still in, I guess, it's the stringent situations. We're still talking about the chumrah of the situation. So let's say you have a Gentile in your house, a live-in maid or whatever, and he wants to cook some eggs for you. Are you allowed to ask my Gentile maid, please cook me some eggs?
No.
You're not. You are not allowed to do that. Cooking would be an iser of Durbanan or Duraita. And he is doing it for
you.
For you. And therefore there would be a problem.
I have a question though. If instead of wanting to cook for you, say like your husband is like an au pair and like they live with you and they would just like, oh, but like use your stove to like cook some eggs for breakfast. Like what
is for himself.
Yeah.
Excellent,
yeah.
Excellent.
But
good.
If they're your eggs are not what's in your house. If they're his eggs, I would say.
What if, like, no, think about how you say if it's your eggs or not. But think about how this, it's an old parent, he lives with you, and he, like, shares your food with you. You know what I mean? Then yes. Then
you're good. Good. So you guys are mischaving for leniency number one. We're going to get to 20 leniencies. Leniency number one is if an Gentile, even if he's in your house, if he's cooking his food, he's cooking his meat, that's okay. Then we don't, he's doing it for himself, he's not doing it for you. And therefore it's okay. Whereas if he's doing it with your food, well, I would say, even if he's using your food, if he's doing it for himself, I think it's okay. The problem is if he's doing it for you, then that's okay.
If he's using your food for himself, that's himself. Wow.
He's still taking care of himself.
Look at his eyes.
Good. Providing
a set.
Sunglasses.
There is what I can ask a Gentile to do for me, and there's what I'm allowed to benefit from. Right? Those are really two separate categories. It could be we have a situation where you're not allowed to ask someone to do something, but you can still benefit from it. Okay? But in general, you're not allowed to ask a Gentile to do malacha for you, and you're not, the rabbis forbade you to benefit from it when it comes to Amir Lanach. That's the general rule.
Wait,
we'll learn about
that in a second. They don't allow you to benefit from it if you ask them? Okay. So if you don't ask me, when you do it, right?
So in general, yes, there's still a problem to benefit even if you didn't ask them to do it for you, but we will learn there are many exceptions.
So, like, Sarah's in that au pair situation where he's like, oh, can I cook eggs? What's up? He cooks eggs, and he's like, oh, there's like a bunch of extra eggs. Like, do you want some? Like, what would that be?
So the Shulchan Aruch specifically writes that if the Gentile makes hot water and she leaves over extra for you, you're not allowed to benefit. We're even Chosha like, that she may have left over extra hot water for
if,
you.
Like, what if like the Kavanah wasn't to like make it for you, it was like make it for yourself, and then there's just extra.
So it depends on the scenario. If there's reason to believe that she did it and she will in the future do it for you, it could still be problematic. If there's no reason to believe that she did that, she was just doing it in general and we can realize she's not doing it for you, then the postkim are lenient. Okay, so that's leniency number two. You guys can write this down. If you remember 20 leniencies at the end of this year, be very nice.
20
leniencies? 20. Okay, so we're up to two.
19.
What? 19 is good too. Okay. Now, and one more point in terms of stringency. If a Gentile did you a malacha, even on Saturday night, I'm not supposed to benefit from that. I have to wait the amount of time that it would have taken for him to do that malacha. It's called Kadesha Yasu. Let's say he went fishing, and he fished you a fish, a fresh fish. So you have to wait the amount of time it would have taken for you to fish that fish before you can eat that Gentile.
Fish,
before you
can eat that Gentile?
Before you can eat that fish. My bad. It was a confusing night last night, sorry. I was
having... He was grinding up Gentiles to put his monster.
Oh, God.
Why?
You're not live on this
crew. Okay. But leniency number three, guys. I hope you're writing this down. Leniency number three is if the Gentile didn't do it for me, he did it for a different Jew, then you don't have to wait on Saturday night the amount of time it would have taken, then you can eat it right away as long as it was not done specifically for you. Okay. Good. So you are going to love the Panini Halacha because he is mamish when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. The leniency king. Not to say that he's always quoting the Shulchan Aruch, the Rosh Hashanah, and he's always quoting post game, and he's not always Nikhil, but he in particular I have seen willing to be lenient. Then on Saturday night you don't have to wait the amount of time you would have taken.
Not really like a leniency.
Not a huge leniency.
So leniency, but it's not like.
It's a leniency within the stringency.
Okay, but it's not.
Which is my favorite way to get you guys to know halacha. I give you a leniency, but implied in the leniency is really stringency.
It's not this section of leniency, though. It's this section.
But if it's things that are made or done by a secular Jew.
Oh, so that's a whole different sugya called Maaseh Shabbat, which I was going to do that sugya, but I want to do this one first. If we have time at the end, we'll get back to that. If not, we'll do a different shir dedicated to that topic.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, but many of the principles are the same. Okay, so if you understand this sugya well, you'll understand that sugya.
Gotcha.
Okay, good. Leniency number, I don't know, four or whatever. If it was a malacha dirabbana, okay?
You can always break those.
Then it's called a shvut de shvut. What does a shvut de shvut mean? Shvut means a... Guys, what does shvut mean? Shvut is a rabbinical law. Shvut is a rabbinical law. Amir Lanafri Vipaskin is a...
Oh, return to.
A rabbinical law, and therefore it is a... Shvut to shvut, rabbinical law, and the rabbis therefore allowed you, were lenient, and said on Saturday night, if they only did a rabbinical law for you, you can benefit from that right away. Okay, then they're not all out lenient, but since it's shvut to shvut, Saturday night, it's okay. Okay, we're good. Next. Now, what if the lenient...
Jimmy the Gentile does a malacha for himself. He, for example, walks into the room. It's pitch black, dark.
Pitch black.
It's dark in the room. This actually happened also yesterday to me. It was dark in the room we were sitting in because, true story, I got locked out of my own Karlach minion.
It's
a hilarious story, but I'll go on a 2-minute tangent. Basically,
I made the whole
week I was working on this Karlach minion, and it was also a singles event. So this whole singles crew was going to come and daven at the minion, and afterwards they're going to make a lunch. So they're all kind of banking on this minion, and it was going to be freezing cold weather, so I didn't know what it was going to be. Anyways, it was all set up. We had organized the food, everything. I'd spoken with the neighbors beforehand. I got a key. I walk in, 8:10 in the morning. The outdoor was open with a key, but there's an indoor, and it was locked. The neighbors who were living in the basement, the people living in the basement, didn't realize it had locked the door. So I'm screaming, "No, let me in, let me in, let me in." 20 minutes, nothing. So I'm completely locked out of my own minion. I'm like, oh God, this is really bad. This is really bad. They're all gonna kill me. No, they must have left for Shabbos or something. So anyways, it was freezing cold outside. Couldn't go to the kotel.
It was raining.
So I'm like, God, all right. And I started thinking, like, why is he doing this to me? I have a whole svara why he did it to me for another time. Anyways, in the end, I ended up going to my local friends, my old yeshiva, Baraita, and they had a minion. And Baruch Hashem, they were extremely kind to me, and we joined in and davened there, which was great for everyone else. The only thing is, people were still coming to the Karlach minion, so I had to wait there in the freezing cold the whole time, davening by myself and shivering.
Bro, you should have a banana mitzvah, right?
Yeah, but wait.
You should have taken banana grams and said, go to Arita.
That's an interesting guy. It's not so posh that you can do that.
But think about it like this, if you put the letters in like weird positions, so you have like, figure it out.
Wait, is there an issue with banana grams on Shabbos?
Another good.
Here's
for Scott. I'm going to let Scott
a little boxes.
Not fun. Anyway, I did play banana grams on Saturday night on Friday night with my wife, which was fun. But here's the
Shabbos.
Here's the Shabbos.
I'm pizza.
So then we ended up, Arita was nice enough to let me use the basement because we didn't have anywhere else to do the kiddush. But the basement was pitch black. It was totally in the dark. So could I have asked a Gentile to open the light for me for what happened to me, there wasn't any Gentile, and there was one of those Shabbos lights.
It was
very romantic. It was very romantic. Anyways, halacha lemaisa, let's get back to some more leniencies. If the Gentile walks in and he's turning on the light not for himself, but because he wants to read a book, or because he said, oh, there's not enough light in this room, he does it for himself.
It's okay.
Am I allowed to benefit from
yes,
that?
Yes, no.
He says, Shlomo Eli, yes. No. So, actually, the halacha is, Aruch HaShulchan writes, you may benefit in that situation because he was only doing it for himself, not for you. In that scenario, you can have your nice Shabbos meal. Okay? So a nice trick that you can do is you can call, and I've done this before. You call Jimmy in and say, "Hey, buddy, you want to get yourself a Coke? You want to make yourself some tea?" And then he will I need quiet. He will make himself a tea, and he's going to turn the light on himself, not for you. And it's okay to benefit from that. Okay? So that's leniency number 4. What about if he's doing it both for you and for him?
Still.
He also wants the Coca-Cola, but he also wants you to have the Coca-Cola, so he's going to turn the light on. What's the halacha?
No, I said.
Not allowed to drink Coca-Cola anyway. Shmartim that not for day?
Oh.
Stop. Just
yeah.
Drinking
soda is an Israelite.
Drinking sugar is a
big deal. Just joking. I'm not. Although I am pretty extreme, I'm not that extreme. Halacha l'maisa, since he did it for himself, you can benefit even if he's doing it for you. Okay, like Yidan and Shlomo. Yes. Okay, good. We're up to, I think, leniency number 5 for those who are following. Leniency number 5. Let's say you have a live-in maid. And you want them to do the dishes. So you ask them to do the dishes. But you know realistically that what is this Gentile going to do? She's going to turn on the electricity. She's going to turn on the dishwasher.
But washing dishes is malacha, and you're going to benefit from this. Why are you lighting it up?
Oh, so maybe it's a problem. It's a malacha, and right.
You can't prepare for something for after Shabbos. Let's say
Shabbos. Oh, no, let's assume that... you're saying that.
Lunch, okay.
So Idan brings in one problem, which is preparing for after Shabbos, and that's one issue. But even beyond that, she's turning on the electricity.
Well, no, but that's what we're talking about. But that's for her use because she needs to wash dishes. But you can't even ask her to wash the dishes because that's malacha.
Okay, good.
So then why can you clear the? No, not clear the. Can you not put your dishes in the? Washing machine.
Well, it's a malacha.
Washer, dishwasher.
Yeah. Like going to open the fridge. Can you open the fridge? That's not a malacha. Okay, so you can ask her to do that. And if she opens up the light to open up the fridge, then fine, that's okay. But you're asking her to do malacha, and you're going to benefit, and she can open the light.
Good. Awesome. So you're bringing up a really, really great kasha. So this is how the pini halacha, or this is at least how I would break it down. When it comes to the dishwasher, it's okay. Because she really could wash the dishes on her own with her hands. And that's not a malacha on Shabbos. The fact that she chooses to use the electricity, that's her choice. She's doing it for her own benefit. You don't gain anything by the fact that she uses a dishwasher. And therefore, it would not be a problem to ask her to do the dishes.
What about the preparation?
When it comes to the preparation... Idan is correct that there would generally be a problem of preparing for after Shabbos, as we mentioned before. Dabir davar means you're not allowed to prepare for after Shabbos, and therefore to ask her to do this might be a problem. However, that issur of asking someone to prepare for after Shabbos, is that rabbinical or is that biblical?
Rabbinical.
It's rabbinical. And therefore, it may once again be in the category of shvut dishvut. It's a rabbinical law in the first place, Amir al-Nafri, and it's a rabbinical law of preparing for after Shabbos. So perhaps, again, I'm not necessarily halachin, paskin and galach on the maisa, but perhaps there, at least for a great need, there may be room for leniency because it is not a biblical law. I'm not saying that necessarily halachin, you should do that. I'm just saying that maybe there'd be reason for leniency. I'm just going to add in another possible leniency, and this has come up in my life. Let's say your wife or you are very finicky, and you just can't deal with all the grimy spoons in the sink on Shabbos. So can I wash my spoons on Shabbos?
No.
So but pastis, the answer is no, because I'm preparing for after Shabbos, and you're not allowed to prepare for after Shabbos. But some poskim are lenient, and halacha lemaisa, I rely upon this leniency, even for me, for my wife, even not even me, for myself, that if it bothers you, if you're finicky, that's my own in Shabbos. That it shouldn't have grimy dishes. The Pini Halacha brings it down, and others also bring it down. I'll show it to you inside Bezrat Hashem. But so there too, perhaps, because it ruins my own in Shabbos, there are those who would be lenient to wash the dishes on Shabbos.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So under that umbrella, what you just said, that's not a suck example, like you're still going to say it. That means that you can ask your mate, a non-Jew, to do any rabbinical halacha.
Oh, so this is a huge, huge debate. The Baal
That's really where you're putting it.
Exactly. But the Baal HaItur opens up this sugya where he says, for Shvut Yishvut Rabbanon, and for a great need, you would be allowed.
Why great need?
So that's because it's a rabbinical law, the rabbis were lenient for a great need. And this itself is a huge modern-day machlokas, how widely we can apply this leniency. And the Raman, the Shulchan Aruch, and Moshe Feinstein all talk about this issue. Can we accept this? Under what situations can we accept this? And we'll talk more about that as we go on in the leniency camp. But yes, you hit it. That is a huge focal point, but, you know, in the debate of how lenient can we be about Amir al-Nachri. Okay? Good. Next. With all that said, the Shulchan Aruch in 266.3 brings a little bit of more machmir opinion. And he says that if you're bringing a non-Jew, and it's obvious to you, to him, and to everyone around you, that you're only bringing this Gentile in to turn on the light. You say, hey, buddy, Jimmy, come here. You know, the light's on, and there's no great need, and you're just bringing him in to turn the light on.
So the Shulchan Aruch writes, in that situation, we would not allow a person to do that, because it's kind of like a Maris Ayin type of situation. It kind of makes a joke out of the situation. And so it's obvious to everyone that you're just bringing him in to turn the lights on, and it's not for a great need, and it's an Inyan D'Oraita. The Shulchan Aruch is Machmir in that situation. And you will see sometimes Sephardi might be a little bit more Machmir than Ashkenazim when it comes to Amir L'Nachri in certain situations, maybe because of this Shulchan Aruch, whereas the Ramah was more lenient. There's a great scene in that movie that I keep quoting, and what's it called? It's an Israeli movie where basically this evil Haredi rabbi is trying to convince the whole Sephardi Masorati community in Nachlaot to become more frum and to flip them out. It's like a really interesting movie. So you have this scene where the lady made Pesach, and the light goes off. You know, all the lights go off. So she says, calling the Goy Shel Shabbat. Like my family or my great-grandfather, you know, it's a Tzorech Mitzvah, so we can get a non-Jew to turn the light on Shabbos. Yeah? And the rabbi, who everyone's in love with because he's so charismatic, says, you can't do that. It's asur. You know, it's the Shulchan Aruch, right? It's forbidden to do this. You can't have him turn the lights on. And you have this extremely awkward moment where the guy is like, my wife is telling him to do this. And it's like, my family, my great-grandparents have always done this. And like, what rabbi, you're telling me that my great-grandparents were violators of Shabbos? And the rabbi is like, but it says it's the Shulchan Aruch, and it's asur. You know, what do we do? And the guy is like, uh-oh, what do I do?
You listen to your wife.
So in the movie, she doesn't listen to his wife. He listens to the rabbi, and I am Sean, if you want to see him.
Is more important than
Rabbanan. Now that you know, if you guys would have been in that situation, you would have pulled out your Panini Alafa, and you would have brought down all these leniencies, and you wouldn't have had as good of a movie.
What?
Absolutely, I'm not.
Wait, they do have an English copy there.
Yeah, they have it in English, but even better, they have it in Hebrew.
Where can I buy one?
They have it in almost all stores, and
they
have
it
in.
But by
the way, this is I printed this out for you in English. You can take this. The reason learning, I think, it's really, really crucial to learn Hilchot Shabbat more than anything else, because it's one category of halachas where you can't just call up your rabbi and be like, "Yo, rabbi, what's halacha?" You have to know what to do on the spot because of Shabbos. So I'm a big fan of learning Hilchot Shabbos really, really well. Okay, good. Anyways, that's Ayin Shalom for that movie. Leniency number 6, okay? Jimmy the Gentile, turns your buddy, you were trying to read, but you forgot to turn all the lights on, and you were struggling to read for your, I don't know, your Tanakh in your room. Jimmy the Gentile sees you're struggling, and he turns the light on for you. Can I still keep reading in my room?
No. No.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
So why no?
Yes. Because there's a specific law that if you not, he does something for you specifically.
Excellent. And turning light on Shabbos is in?
John,
no, it's direct according to most poskim. So it would be a problem. But, or bone according to Chazanish. Exactly. Very good. Okay, good. But on the other hand, you didn't ask for it, but it doesn't matter. He's still doing it for you, so there might be a problem of benefiting. So why would I? So where does the leniency come in? So I said you were reading anyway. So because you were reading anyway, it just made it easier for you. So it's not called a hana'a mamashi, and therefore, writes the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Brura, in that case, you can benefit from him doing it for you. We have to distinguish. You can't ask him to do it because Nisra Doraita. But if he did it for you, b'di'eved, you can benefit from him.
What happens to you at that moment? You didn't need the light on, but like reading, passing, you know, because it got dark outside, you know?
So, I think we'd be fine.
You can stay in the room?
You can stay in the room and read. As long as you could have read the book,
there is a
even without Jimmy the Gentile, it's okay.
Right, but at that point in tonight, you wouldn't have been able to read anymore if Jimmy the Gentile hadn't turned on that light at that point previously.
It's a great kasha, and I didn't see that Shiloh specifically discussed, but it seems to me we make kind of like a low plug. As long as you could have read without him, even if maybe practically you wouldn't have, I think it's okay. But I'm not 100% sure. And everything I'm saying now, you should definitely ask. These are more just to make you aware of the different opinions. You should ask your local Orthodox rabbi. And
that's you.
And hopefully it's not me. You get a wiser, bigger bearded rabbi.
You shaved your own.
But at least you should look into Pini Alafa because he mamish, discusses it with Maisa. Yes.
What's the deal with asking a Gentile to do something for you? You're not going to benefit from it.
Why would you ask him to do it for you then?
To help someone else with me.
As long as a Jew is going to do it for you.
No Jew.
But there's a homeless man.
I assume if you're asking him to do it, then that's still within the Isser, even if you're not specifically benefiting.
And you can't take benefit from it, right?
In general, you cannot benefit from it. Obviously, like we're seeing, there's a lot of exceptions, but in general, the rule is you can't benefit from it. Okay, and again, you have to distinguish between what you can benefit from and what you can ask him to do. Here, you wouldn't be able to ask him to do it, but you could benefit from it, but yeah. Okay, next. Leniency number 7. If Jimmy turned on, let's say you were trying to go to sleep, but you couldn't fall asleep. Why couldn't you fall asleep? Because you left the light on. And then Jimmy turns the light off so that you can go to sleep.
But he didn't tell him to do it.
Can you go to sleep in that room?
Yes, because at that point there is no light on. And there's technically nothing because Flusher came before Aura, and therefore it's okay.
So, not sure if your Shvara necessarily holds up Halacha Lemaisa, but Halacha Lemaisa, you are correct. You can go to sleep in that room. Okay, guys, calm down. We have 20 minutes to blast through 13 more leniencies, so let's keep focused. Okay, you can once again go to sleep in that room. The reason is twofold. Is it an Isser D'Oraita or an Isser D'Rabbanan to be Mechabet, to distinguish a light on Shabbos?
Yeah.
It's an Isser D'Rabbanan.
What?
It's an Isser D'Rabbanan to be
Mechabet. You can't distinguish.
Let me explain. It's an Isser D'Oraita if you're distinguishing it for the purpose of then relighting it. That's the Malacha and the Torah and the Mishkan. But it's only an Isser D'Rabbanan to distinguish a light for the purpose of turning off a light. So it's an Isser D'Rabbanan, and it's not a Hana'ah Mamashit, said the Pini Halacha. It's not a Mamish benefiting, and therefore you can go to sleep. Guys, again, I'm asking you to focus. It's hard for everyone to focus when guys are talking. And therefore, Halacha L'maisa, you can go to sleep in that room. Any questions?
Even if you ask it specifically to
try. You're not supposed to ask him to do it for him. In general, we may see that there's some
opinion.
But even if you ask them to do it, you made a mistake, you ask them to do it, you can benefit from it after the fact. Perhaps there's reason to say you can even ask him to turn off the light because it's part of your own Eid Shabbos, and therefore it's a tzarech gadol, according to some mitzvah, according to some posting. If you're not going to sleep at night, you're going to be groggy the whole Shabbos, and maybe that would be in the category of tzarech gadol that we were discussing before. Okay.
Tzarech
Gadol? Yeah, Tzarech Gadol. For a great need, there are some rabbis who are lenient. Okay, next. Leniency number 8. This I'm sure you guys have heard of. It's called Bederech Shel Sipur. That's when you're not telling him to do anything. You're just telling him a story. Right? So, for example, let's say the light's off. So you don't tell the non-Jew to do anything. You just say, did you know that the light is off in my house? And did you know that Jews are not allowed to turn on electricity on Shabbos? Did you know that? Like, it's really crazy. Right? So in that situation, it's called a remiza, a hinting, bederech shel sipur. It doesn't mean in any situation you can do that. But when it comes to a great need situation, and especially if you could have survived without it, this Derech Shel Sipur Heter is another leniency which some posts can take into account, which they prefer you say it in the Derech Shel Sipur as opposed to outright asking the Gentile to do something. I got just to clarify, if you say, can you do me a favor, then you're already not Derech Shel Sipur. You're already asking him to do something for you. So you can't say, do me a favor. All you can do is say a story, and then in all of these other... you can. Gesturing is also within the category of telling him to do something. You could make a distinction. You could say, according to Rashi, that it's daber daver, that it's a matter of speech. It would be okay because you're just gesturing. Whereas according to the other guys, where it's shlichus, it would be problematic. But Allah Almighty, we're machmir in all accounts, and therefore we consider gesturing the same thing as telling someone to do it. But
For other reasons, we might allow someone to be lenient, but gesturing on its own would not necessarily get you at it.
Yeah. Sign language counts as an interruption between washing?
It's a good question. Halacha lemaisa, you are allowed to interrupt between washing and eating bread. If it's litzarach the bread, it's better. But even if you didn't do a litzarach bread, if you made it, if you did something unrelated, you wouldn't have to wash again, and you wouldn't say a new bracha. But sign language, I think it's a really good question. I don't know. You know, like, would that be considered speech? I don't think it's considered on the same madriga as speech. I think it would be more like a hint. But again, if you did sign language, you wouldn't wash again. You wouldn't say a new bracha. It's only, but if you said hamoti lachem in aretz, and then you did sign language, that then the kasha would come into account. Okay, but that's a different topic. Fine. Leniency number 9. For the sake of a mitzvah, the Ramah brings down that you can ask the Gentile to violate a rabbinical law. Okay? Once again, it's a shvut of shvut l'tzorach mitzvah, and therefore the rabbis were lenient. This is a huge, huge leniency. L'tzorach mitzvah, for the sake of a great mitzvah, the rabbis allowed us to do a to ask a Gentile to violate a rabbinical law. Okay? For a great mitzvah. So, for example, the Mishnah Berurah writes in Kaf Chet Hey that you can ask a Gentile to bring Kiddush through, to carry for you through a Carmelis, i.e. a place where it's only rabbinically forbidden to violate the law, even though he's violating the law for you. But since it's Letzarach Mitzvah, right? What's the mitzvah? Kiddush. You can ask a Gentile to violate this law for you. Okay? Mishnah Berurah even adds, if you don't have food, you can even ask a Gentile to bring bread through this Carmelis, which is only rabbinical law, on Shabbos. Okay? So that's a huge leniency. With that said, that doesn't mean any mitzvah is permitted. So for example, the Mishnah Berurah says, if you already have your bread and kiddush, you can't ask him to bring extra kugel. Or, I don't know, things that are unnecessary for the tzarech of the meal. There it's a little subjective. Your wife may feel like you need the soup for the owning Shabbos, and you may feel like, I don't need soup, I'll be okay with the salad. So there, it's a little subjective, but with Tzarech Mitzvah, the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah do bring down this leniency. Okay, so that's also a huge, huge... But again, it's only in a rabbinical law. If it's a biblical law, that doesn't necessarily get you out of it. You guys following so far? You guys still with me?
That'd be good. So would be okay too? If you wanted to move like your phone for you?
Oh, good. Leniency number 11. Excellent. The rabbis also permitted it if it was a case of great loss, or a hefset. Great monetary loss. If it's great monetary loss, so there too the rabbis allowed us to ask a Gentile for a rabbinical law. What's a good example of rabbinical law?
If your phone is outside, it's going to rain.
If it's muksa, and it's usher for me to move the phone in, let's say, so I could still ask a Gentile to move it for me because it's a great loss. My phone's going to get ruined, and it's only rabbinical. So therefore, I can ask a Gentile to bring my phone in for me. Got that, guys?
Sweet beans.
Sweet beans. So many made it coolest. Okay, next. Litzarech echole. Okay? If someone is sick, there too, the rabbis allowed up you to ask a Gentile to violate a rabbinical law for you. Okay? That's, again, the Shulchan Aruch in Kuf Chaf Chet. If someone is sick, you can ask a Gentile. Let's say you're in a hospital, you can have the Gentile move the bed up, move the bed down, no problem. Again, we're not even talking about a life-threatening situation. If it's life-threatening, then
obviously
even a Jew can, right, should violate Shabbos. But when it comes to even a non-life-threatening situation, but he's a chole, there too the rabbis were lenient. Okay? So that's leniency number 12. Okay. Next. Free katan. Someone under the age of 13, there too the rabbis allowed us to allow a Gentile to...
For a minor or for a minor?
For a minor. For a minor, let's say kids are scared, and the room, the lights were turned off, okay?
So you can have a Gentile turn the lights on so that the children will not be scared. Even though turning lights on might be an Isra Doraita, the Rama writes in Kuf Chaf Ches, there too we are lenient. Okay? It's huge. Okay, next. What about, this comes up all the time, in a Beis Knesset. Okay? And you forgot to turn the light on in the Beis Knesset. Right? So can I ask the Gentile to turn the light on, or perhaps to turn the air conditioning on, or perhaps it's cold to turn the heater on? Can I ask Jimmy the Gentile to turn the light on
for Yes, because
why?
The street could go and on night Shabbos.
And there's another factor here, Litzorach Rani. It's for the sake of a great need and for the masses. So that's another sniff lahakel for the sake of the masses. Litzorach Rani. So there too, even for a deraita, many will allow you to do that. So to turn. Oh, so many will prefer that you do it bishinoi, because then it's only an isra derabanan, and that would be ideal. Very good, because the Gentiles are doing the shinoi, it's only derabanan, and others even.
How can you tell them, not tell them to do it in the shinoi?
What do you mean? How could you? No. We're saying you're allowed to tell them.
Oh, yeah.
You're allowed to tell them, but ideally tell them to do it with your left hand. Some say. And others say you don't even need to do that. It's fine. The Torah Rabbim, the Torah Mitzvah. You can turn on the air conditioner. You can turn on the light. Again, assuming it's a real need. If it's not really a need and just stam, then that would not. Right. So there. Now this is a huge machlokas. I'm just giving you the bottom line. There are those who say the Shulchan Aruch talks about a case when it was freezing cold, and that the Shgui Shal Shabbat come and turn on the heat. That this was a practice in many places, in northern European places where it was freezing. So there, everyone's considered like a mitzdayer, a little bit like a chole, and you can therefore have a Gentile turn on the heat. It's unclear if it's really hot, if the same, if I can make that same leniency of heat and cold, but there are authorities, modern day poskim, modern day achronim, like I believe the Shmir Shabbos Kilchata, based on Rosh Hashanah Zalman Arbach, and others, who are mekel and allow you to turn on the heat, l'tzarach rabim, or if you're having a big Shabbos meal and there are 10 people who are really hot, there too, there are those who allow you to ask Jimmy the Gentile, even without a shinoi, even without a hint, to